The following is presented by Le Sommet Coors Light, celebrity guests, entertainment, and oh, a bit of sports. Every Wednesday night on RDS.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How you doing?
Excellent. How are you, Mitch?
I'm fine, thanks. Rod's a real throwback here. He's going to the hockey game with a tie.
That's good.
Huh? You remember all those?
I do.
Yes,
Rod?
It
was great. The women were dressed up unbelievably well, and the men were even sharper, believe it or not, in those days.
All the fedoras, when you look at pictures.
That's the image.
Back hair, the whole deal.
Exactly. Sunday's best for hockey games. I'm thinking of the movie The Rocket, of course. But yeah, when it was...
When I was a kid, Rod, it was well past that. Well into the 60s.
Wow.
Late 60s, people were still kind of dressed up.
It was I still think even the early 70s, the 71 team, they were definitely dressed up.
Well, you know what you can notice? I don't know if it's still around. Classic, they used to show classic games all the time. The ESPN Classic Network became Classic Sports. Is you could see how frumpier the fans started to become as we moved deeper and deeper into the 70s and the hair got longer. It wasn't the same.
There were
less suits and no ties and no fedoras, that's for sure.
No.
Anyway, Rod's bringing the style to the Bell Center tonight.
Well done.
Try to match what Alexander Radulov's going to bring.
Yeah, he might bring something, but that Sagan guy's pretty good too. So's Ben.
We're going to get to all three of them and the Canadians in just a moment. But you heard Brendan Gallagher there, Pierre, after the game, talk about the penalty kill. This is nuts what's happening.
And why do you think that?
Well, it's just watching this. It can't be by design that players are literally standing still when it's 5-on-4 for the other guys. They're playing 5-on-4 the way you would play two men short or a 4-on-3 in overtime.
It's what happens when you don't have a lot of confidence. It's what happens when the coaching staff doesn't trust the players in terms of their organizational depth. You've heard the coach say, we're trying to force feed guys and put them into situations they're really not prepared for. Those are his quotes, not mine. So this shouldn't be shocking. This is what happens when there's a crisis of confidence.
Okay, but this particular issue, this has been a season-long issue.
Right, I'm not arguing. But then again, I didn't think this was a very good team before the season started, and I told you that. So I'm not surprised. None of this should be shocking. This is going to be a major overhaul. They can try to spin it any way they want. I'm trying to be forthright and honest with you. This is going to be major work. Major work.
I see a team that right now is, with all the injuries, we got a lot of guys that are definitely not, you know, ready for a lot of the things that we're throwing at them, you know, and yet I see a bunch of guys that are really trying hard and they're competing hard, and the third period is a sign of that.
All right, I think what they outshot, they had 24 shots on goal, but that's what Pierre was talking about, what Claude Julien said. But.
And you know, like, for instance, the best player for Columbus last night, I think you would agree, I know Wenberg had a big night, was Seth Jones. Did Seth Jones play in the third period?
No, that's why they had 25 shots.
Is he a legit
candidate this season, Pierre, in the Norris Trophy talk?
I think he should be in the discussion. He might be a tinge early, but he should definitely be in the discussion. I mean, you might have two on one team, you know, with Roman Josi and PK Subban. You might have two on one team that might be nominated. So it's a little, I think you should be in the discussion for sure. I think you should be in the discussion.
Well, I want to get back to the penalty kill, okay? Because, I know, you know, the goaltending is part of that. Goaltending hasn't been very good for the Canadiens this season on the penalty kill. But schematically, this does not look like an NHL team when they're killing penalties.
I agree.
And I remember, didn't matter who the skaters were, they were interchangeable, they would attack whoever the puck carrier was on the other team. Somewhere along the line, it became stationary, just moving sticks back and forth, allowing teams with a lot of talent. You face a power play. Even the Columbus Blue Jackets, the worst power play in the league, you got Seth Jones back there. And you give them time and space to make plays and pick shots, they're going to take advantage of it.
I agree with everything you just said. You're not wrong on anything you said. Not wrong on anything. Which is really crazy when you think about it, because when Claude Julien was coaching in Boston in particular, their penalty killing was very strong. And I know Chara was part of that. I know Patrice Bergeron was part of that. I know back in the day, Danny Pye and Gregory Campbell were part of that. I follow all that lineage and everything else, so I get that. But his philosophy hasn't changed. But I think he just said it best in the soundbite that Rod was able to dig up. When you don't have a lot of confidence in the players you're putting on the ice, and that's very apparent, he doesn't doubt their work habits. You think he's just wondering how good they are. And so it's hard to throw a lot of stuff. Let me give it to you this way, the simplest terms. I remember leaving Pittsburgh and going to Hartford, and we had an amazing power play in Pittsburgh, and a lot of it was because of the skill level that we had as a player with the players, not the schematic of the coaches. But we still, when I went to Hartford, I still brought the same schematic to Hartford from Pittsburgh. And you know what? After about 3 days in camp, I realized can't do that power play with this team. We just don't have Mario Lemieux. We don't have Joey Mullen. We don't have Larry Murphy. We don't have Ronnie Francis. So I had to scrap it all. I think you get into a situation when you realize, you know what, we just don't have the guys that can maybe do what I used to do.
Okay, that's perfect, Pierre, because you talked about Claude's days in Boston. He arrived in Montreal, as you know, Valentine's Day a year ago. So from Feb 14 to the end of the year, spanning about 25 games, Montreal, the best penalty-killing unit in the league. And they climbed up to 14th overall because of what Julien was able to do. And the common knowledge was, conventional thinking is, okay, with a full training camp, he'll be able to build on that. If he came to a realization like you did in Hartford, shouldn't that happen in September or during the exhibition season, and then you realize, okay, something has to change?
Yeah, maybe. But again, I'm not going to try to get inside his mind because I have so much respect for him as a man and also as a coach. I don't think this is in any indication of him as a coach. I really don't. I truly don't believe that at all. His body of work, most of his career, has been very, very strong. Again, I don't want to. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just trying to. It's not a very good collection of players.
Looking at the game last night, for me, the only word that goes true with when I look at De La Rose play is useless.
François Gagnon,
he must have cut off.
No, useless is what he said.
Oh, he said, I didn't hear that part.
Yeah, useless.
No, he didn't have a good game last night.
Oh, he was on for all five. He was on all five. But why are they playing him with Galchenyuk? I mean, like, I don't understand it from both angles. He has a real chance, maybe not as real anymore, but he has a chance to be on this team as a fourth-line centerman. Why are you punishing Galchenyuk by having to try to create offense with a non-offensive centerman, while at the same time moving De La Rose up in the lineup where he's not going to play if he's a regular NHLer?
They're trying to find solutions with this group. They are trying to explore every single avenue that they can to try to figure out, you know, what's going to work and what probably will not work. So that's what they're trying to do. I mean, these are dress rehearsals. These are live fire exercises. Try to evaluate where you think you can go into summer and what you need to address. I think it's pretty apparent to everybody watching with an open mind that they've got serious work to do. I mean, don't buy into the spin. We have this great young team. We have all these great – I'm telling you, I'm being honest with you.
No, and it's like if Weber is healthy and Price bounces back.
Please,
and if
don't. Yeah. It's not – That's
look, Carey Price,
games.
And I do want to, and I feel like I have to qualify it all the time because people haven't heard it before. You got to be blind to acknowledge that Carey Price had a bad year. Maybe it's the worst year of his career. But on the other hand, it is very difficult. It's easy to say, well, if Carey Price just plays, you know, his career and he's a 920 goalie, they'd be in much better shape. It is very difficult to play 920 goal behind a team like this. It's.
I don't know anybody that can.
I think if Carey Price had a really good year, he'd be around 915 maybe. You remember the year they finished in last place?
I was going to say 910.
I mean, it's just you got to see what
you see it. You see it, and I know how much you love the organization, as do a lot of other people that are on this show. But you also know the reality, and the reality is that they got to fix a lot of stuff. And it starts with the scoring 5-on-5, and it goes to the special teams, and I think more than anything else, it goes to the depth on defense. It really does. I mean, everything flows through your defense in this league. It really does. And
at least there's an acknowledgement that they have to fix it. At least there has been an acknowledgement that they have to fix it. Now they have to fix it. Now they have to fix it.
Yeah, that's the starting point. I would agree with that.
Gallo, give us a reason for optimism here.
A reason for optimism?
Yeah, not over the last 12 or 13 games, but next season. Give us a reason for optimism. Well, Pierre just said it's going to be a long, hard climb back here. Give us a reason to...
Well, from what I've seen, I think there's some optimism in the play of Nikita Scherbak, especially in the game last night. I thought he was going. I think Mike Riley, it's a small sample of what I've seen, but he looks like an upgrade on what they had before on defense. I think Noah Juulsen is cracking his way into the lineup slowly but surely. There's your optimism, Mitch. That's the best I can do. Some of the younger players that have been okay since the trading deadline.
Rod, you want to add to this? Come on, Rod, you can do it. You're going to the game tonight. You're wearing a tie.
Okay, how about this? Some of the players can't possibly be as bad as they were this year. Like Drouin, for example. Can't possibly do any worse.
If they don't move him out of the middle, I don't see I see maybe 15 goals at this time of year next year if he's in the middle again. Instead of 11, maybe 18.
Okay, so that gives me a question for Pierre. Is if Drouin is the second line center instead of the first and he doesn't have to go up against the top units on other teams, does that help him if they want to keep him in the center ice but they have someone ahead of him at least?
It might give him a little bit more room, and then maybe it opens up a little bit more on the power play, but I still think he's a natural winger. I still think the heavy lifting defensively has kind of curtailed his offense. I was worried he wasn't going to get to 25 goals. I remember saying that to Mitch before the season started. He had never been there, and I said, I'm not sure he can get there, and he's not getting there.
Ray said he'd score 25 falling out of bed.
Yeah, well, I didn't. So, again, Ray has his opinion, I have mine. I didn't think that.
Well, I don't think Ray thought he'd play center, though.
Well, no, but that's what they said when they got him. He was going to be a centerman.
Well, they were kind of hedging, right? Initially, it was like...
Do you remember what I said to you when they got him? I'm pretty sure I remember pretty clearly what I said. I said, he's a nice player, but he got beaten out by Braden Point, who most people in Montreal didn't know. That's why he became disposable. And I said, if they try playing him at center, you're going to have a big problem.
Mm-hmm. And he's not a number one guy. He's just not a guy that carries teammates.
He was playing close to the seventh or eighth forward in Tampa. That's where he was playing.
But he could evolve into a top left winger.
Of course he can. That I haven't even questioned that. I think he can. But they've got to get him an elite center iceman to play with. So he doesn't have to do the heavy lifting defensively, and he can utilize his greatest gift, and I think that's his speed, his straight-ahead two-step acceleration is very strong, and he's got really quick hands. Of course he can, but again, it's how they're going to – it's called asset management. And I don't think it's not – again, I'm not blaming the coach in this one. They haven't given the coach a lot of assets to manage. But in this case, they haven't given. He's had no other option. They just haven't had enough. And for whatever reason, until they settle on what they're going to do with Galchenyuk, again, you're going to have glaring deficiencies because I don't think they've managed the assets that they've had very well.
Okay, here's another attempt at positive thinking.
Good.
You know, in football, how growing up the kids will play all positions so that they understand all the positions. And both sides of the ball so that they know what specifically the other side of the ball is trying to do, and it gives them that collective thinking of what's going on in the game. Do you think Jonathan Drouin spending this whole season at center can actually benefit him if he plays left wing because he'll know what everybody else on the ice is supposed to be doing?
It could. I mean, that's a fair mode of deduction. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Learning a little bit more about what you need to do defensively, but coaches have tried to deal with that with him for a long time, but I don't think that hurts him at all. In fact, it probably does help him a little bit. Absolutely.
I just want to see next year a lot more of the guy that we saw in the breakaway, the guy that we saw in the shootout. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, I think everybody does, but I also think you want to see a cohesive team. You don't want to see a team that plays in fits and starts. You want to see a team that's cohesive, so there's not a lot of different swings in terms of the season. There's always going to be some ups and downs, but this has been just a turbulent-filled season, and that's not the way you're going to win. They've got to get cohesion right from the start of the year.
We're really happy about it. Look, we're lucky. I knew how the tug was here, and we pushed hard, and I'm sure Montreal pushed hard. Everybody, a lot of teams pushed hard, but I felt like I had a lot of knowledge that only Montreal had, and that was I saw him in the highest competition in the world, which is the Olympics, and I saw how much the players looked up to him and how much they relied on his competitiveness, and I didn't want to let that go. My advantage was having to coach against him and live next door to him in the Olympics. Their locker room was right next door to us, so I saw him every day. I saw the way he practiced. Their practices were either before or after ours right away. And so we had a lot of information for a few years on what he had and the impact he had with his teammates. And even with older players on the Russian Olympic team, they really looked up to him. And we left Sochi thinking, if this guy comes back, he's going to be a major impact player because of the way he practices and competes. And well, I'm a BS artist, so I don't know. I mean, it's man, I'm a salesman. I've been that my whole life. And so I hunted him down. I knew where he was in Russia, and I knew where he was in Italy, and I hunted him down and just stayed on it.
Some of the backstory in why Alexander Radulov ended up in Dallas, Pierre.
Well, again, I remember telling you coming out of Sochi before Hitchcock ever gave you that story that he was one of the few guys that could come back and play out of that Olympics that weren't NHL players already. The other one was Leo Komarov. I remember telling you that those were the two guys coming out of Sochi that if you went to and it's a big if because not everybody goes to practice. If you went to practice like Hitchcock did, because I saw him there, and you studied what guys were doing, you would have seen a passionate guy. And if you would have seen the reaction that he presented after the Russians were eliminated and the emotion in his face and in his eyes in particular, especially at ice level, you would know exactly what Ken is talking about. And so hats off to him. That was a really brilliant piece of, I think, scouting and being aware, but it shows you part of how you have to go hard to lure free agents and to get players you think can fit into what you're trying to do.
Probably a more of an extreme word than surprised. Heard that he's a good playmaker and seen some, I don't know, kind of typed his name on YouTube when he first came to us. I didn't know a lot about him. Knew he was a good playmaker, had a good year in Montreal. But really, his character, his leadership, his work ethic, I mean, he's such a contagious guy. For us to get him, it's been season-changing, and I definitely love playing with him.
How about that? Tyler Seguin knew the talent but didn't know much else. Real eye-opener for him this season.
Well, that's it. But again, that's why coaches and managers and scouts have to do a lot of legwork because players aren't doing that. They're not paid to do that. They're paid to play. And so you know the guys in your league. You don't know the guys away from your league. And that's a great soundbite. I think the world of Tyler Seguin. I think that I told you before the year that I thought he had a chance to lead the league in scoring. He's going to be close. I don't think he'll do it, but he's going to be darn close. But he respects those guys. I know one thing. When I visited with he and Jamie Benn this summer, they were so gunned up to have Hitchcock as their coach, and they were really excited about the prospects of having Radulov on their team.
So lineup notes, Justin, for the Canadians, since they didn't hold a morning skate, Claude Julien just wrapping up with the media. No changes on the blue line. Antti Niemi starts in goal, and one change up front. Daniel Carr will be a healthy scratch. Byron Fraze gets in his spot.
Yeah. Okay, there's another guy that keeps, it doesn't seem to matter what he does. He just, watching this develop, and he, you know, is he a difference maker? No. But watching this, I don't understand why they just don't send him to Laval for the rest of the season and bring somebody up who might have a future. Because yeah, Daniel Carr is good down low. He goes to the net. Claude Julien is always complaining about players not paying the price and going to the net.
Well, especially with this team, you know, that's been one of the major arguments is they're not overly large and they don't have a lot of sandpaper. And as one of my old coaches used to say, vim, vigor, and vitality, they don't have a lot of that. That's one player that I think does have some of that.
No question, and sorry to interrupt here, but it must be so immensely frustrating if, as a player, you feel you're doing everything possible to stay in the lineup, and you can't really get a break. And if I'm off and he's been given some kind of clarity or behind the scenes he's not doing something that he's asked to do, well, then fine. But based on the information...
Well, he's not scoring.
Well, but based on what we see, he's doing everything.
There are a lot of guys in that team that aren't scoring.
All right. And not everybody's this guy as we finish up with Pierre.
Kuznetsov looking. Ovechkin drives it. And it's diving Hellebuck. Rebound. Score! Alex Ovechkin still going strong, overpowering at 600.
There you go, his second of the night.
There's so many stories about him, and the one that I just, in terms of numbers, is that in any one season since he's been in the league, he's never scored less than 32 goals. To me, that is just unbelievable. In this modern era, with all the injuries, with people keying in on him all the time, that is just an amazing number.